You're listening to Cosmic Tonic.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, let me say that again.
Cosmic Tonic.
Hello. Thanks for tuning in to Cosmic Tonic. Today, we explore magic in the stars with Amaya Rourke. I'll give a little bit of a disclaimer. This is advanced material. But if you're a beginner, I encourage you to not shy away from this episode because it's a great example of all the many possibilities of learning or practicing astrology. If you like what we do, please leave us a 5-star rating, write a review, or share the podcast with your friends. We appreciate it. And there's a couple different ways you can listen to us. One way is on your favorite podcast app, or by subscribing to us on YouTube, where you can listen while enjoying a fun and dreamy VHS montage. Thanks for being here, and we hope you enjoy the show.
Okay, so we are so excited to be here with Amaya Rourke to discuss the fixed stars. So I might just share a little smidgen of history between us, just because Amaya is one of the very first people I ever met in the, let's say, online Astro Twitter community, which, to be frank, I have an intermittent presence on at best. So, but it's been such a joy to watch your own presence and your own, the knowledge that you share expand over the years. And so we're really delighted to have you here to talk about the stars and to talk about also magic and working with the stars magically. So with that said, I might turn it over to you, Amaya, to maybe introduce yourself a little more in depth in terms of, let's say leading ways that you identify or that you want to be known in this moment in time right now.
Oh gosh, Eliza, you're so generous. Thank you. And, how we met was I was a very, very nervous podcast guest for Chris Brennan way back when. I was in the middle of switching to traditional astrology and you emailed me and we started an email exchange and it was delightful. So you were one of like the best interactions I had right off the bat with the community. I've always been so grateful for your friendship. And thankfully, between your Sag and my Aquarius placements, like it's been very like long distance and long periods of time, but then we reconnect and we're like, oh my God, I miss you so much. So it's been really delightful. I'm a professional astrologer at this point, which always feels weird to say out loud. Cause I'm like, is this really a profession today? Is it? But also is it, am I, that's always a question. I think more important to me is I'm an animist and that is a huge part of my practice. Actually more primary than the stars itself is to recognize that we are in a living world, both seen and unseen. And that's what actually got me into the magic side of this was being in a more direct relationship with this living seen and unseen world. And so my practice has been largely informed by that because I don't treat the planets or the stars or various different things as objects. I treat them as things that we're in relationship with. And I hate even using the word things, but it's just a little easier, right? Language evades us. And my goal with all of my clients and now my students, because I now teach a class, which is also kind of wild, is to get them in that relationship and get them talking with, in a sense, their celestial parentage or lineage. Because we're all little, I like to say, celestial talismans, and we are the children of these beings. And they do want to be in relation with us. And so that is the primary goal in what I do. I also believe that in doing that, we become closer connected with the world around us that is seen, because you start to realize they are in constant emanation around us. Whether we're talking about your literal environment and how they reflect the planets and the stars, or we just got done having a really rousing conversation about our pets, we start to see that the celestial world is constantly in contact with us. And I think that's beautiful, especially if you're someone who maybe has a hard time with connecting, maybe mystically with the world. Maybe you feel like everyone else is having these crazy experiences, these peak spiritual experiences, and you don't, when actually the world is magical all the time. We just don't see it that way because we're not in that relationship. So my goal is to help people start that relationship and build it.
I'm really, okay, so I wanted to ask you actually about how animism informs your magic. So I was going to leave that towards the end, but now that we're talking about animism, I'm so intrigued by this because, you know, we have many magical practitioners in the community where it seems like we have really goal-oriented magic. So we want to get, and I'm not criticizing this at all, but let's say practical magic. We want to get this job, so we do a working around it. We want to find love, so we do a working around it. At least with my understanding of theurgy, which is perhaps more devotional or more in contact with a higher presence, not purely to get something out of it, but to practice that sense of, a communion with something that's somehow transcendent or more global, larger than all of us in some way. But I guess my question is your relationship with these beings, would you describe it as devotional, or would you describe it more as relational and less hierarchical? Like how would you describe that relationship with the beings that you speak to and talk to and communicate with?
That's a really great question. It's both. And, you know, we do need to be respectful and honoring, you know, I mean this very literally, if these are beings that can blink things into existence, it's a good idea to have a respectful relationship. And to recognize, like, yeah, we have these relationships where we can be very close to them and very personal, but also, and I know this sounds kind of funny, they're kind of like your sky daddies for real. And you want to be really mindful of that because it's just like any other relationship, really, except that there might be bigger consequences if you do something that is disrespectful. My big thing, it's a good thing to bring up, the whole like goal-oriented magic. I don't think that there's anything wrong with that, but I feel like the way I describe it is a lot of people do what I call vending machine magic. And we're not just talking about celestial magic, because I also do folk magic. And what this means is you put your quarter in and you expect to get your bag of chips out, but you don't realize that without that relationship, what you're really dealing with is kind of like a loan shark. It's not really a vending machine. You're making an agreement with something very large, and they will eventually come back for their due, probably with interest too. But when you have that relationship, it's much more like going to a good friend that you have an established rapport with and saying, hey, I'm struggling, can you help me with this? And they're much more likely to assist without some of the consequences I've seen attached, especially to specific types of magic. And so for me, devotion is where we start, but it builds into relationship. Like in my class, what I have my students do is very simple. You have your planetary devotion every day, right? So like today is Tuesday, it's going to be Mars. We do our theurgy. But afterwards, when you're done saying your Orphic hymn, lighting your candle, putting on your incense and giving honor to this entity, we then can take out like a tarot deck and maybe ask it questions and get to know it better. And especially around things like, you know, how do you want this relationship to go? And what kind of devotion do you prefer? And what do you want to teach me? What are your limitations, right? This is literally like going on a date in a sense. And when we don't treat that like they are going to answer us, that's when I believe that we get into some trouble because, again, you treat it like a vending machine. And over time, if you were treated like a vending machine where your friends came up to you and just asked, and they're like, oh, I gave you this, so you should give me this, you'd eventually get sick of it. You'd eventually be like, this is not really a relationship. This is an exchange. And that's fine, but let's be honest about it, right? And I find that that's really key here. What we're missing in the occult world, regardless of astrology or not, is like that relationship. And also, once you get into that relationship, you don't have a need to do as much magic anyways, because you kind of slip into the flow of time and the flow of space, and you kind of show up in that flow and things happen more naturally. So you don't have to constantly magic your way into or out of situations. So there's a lot of benefits to that relationship building. It does need to have a bit of devotion. They are bigger than us, but also they do want something that's personal and between you and them.
And how long do you have your students working on these relationships?
So when we first start off, I'm like, you know, let's make a commitment we can actually stick to. Because I think that's the big thing. These entities are not looking for perfection. First of all, again, if they can blink things into existence, perfection is kind of silly from a human perspective. I always like make the comparison of like, our most beautiful cathedral is nothing compared to a nebula. So why are you getting caught up in having the most beautiful altar or the perfect crystals or whatever? Just use what you have right now. Also, it's a really horrible way of gatekeeping, especially for people who are less resourced, to be like, you have to have all this perfect stuff. Most of us, you know, we either don't have time or we don't have money or we don't have space. And so my big thing is like, even if it's just a file folder that you've put the sigil or an image of that entity into with the Orphic hymn on the other side, which, to give credit, Ivy Bromius over at Circle Thrice gave me this tip. I was like, oh, this is a good one. Get a little file folder, put that image on there, put, you know, your Orphic hymn in there, maybe stick some sticks of incense in there, get a little tea light candle. That's good enough. Maybe carve the glyph in for that planet. And it can be a 15-minute thing. First thing in the morning, I don't even worry about planetary hours. I'm like, if you've got the planetary day, just do it the first thing when you wake up, get it out of the way, obviously be present. And I think that's really important, consistency and presence. If you're going to spend that 15 minutes, be totally there. You know, don't be distracted. Don't have the TV on. Actually sit for 15 minutes. It's the very least you can do. It's kind of like every morning I have coffee with my ancestors. I may not be able to go and tend to them in a very deep way, but I can have that coffee, right? It's 10 minutes of my time. Well, it's the same when we're working with celestial entities. If you have extra time, that's when you can do things like pulling out a tarot deck or maybe giving them additional offerings. Or I love when you get joyful with it. A lot of people, and I'm one of them, I'm very Saturnian, we get very serious, right? But I've got some great students. They're super mercurial and I love it. And like, they'll dance around or they'll put on a song that reminds them of that planet. Or they're like, you know, I just feel like I needed to give myself a Mars makeover today. So I dressed up like Bowie with like, you know, the lightning strike across my face and I was fierce. And I'm like, good. They want you to get in touch with them in a lot of different ways. It doesn't have to be this constantly serious thing. I think that if you're going to start that relationship, make a very small commitment you can stick to and commit to it for a few months, 3 months at the minimum, and see how your life starts to move. And I'll bet you'll find that it's really nurturing. It's a touchstone for your day. And also, it actually starts to make, again, your life flow in a different way that it hasn't before, especially if you have a troubled relationship with a planet. Because I know that Kestrel and I both have Mars and Taurus, and like, I joke all the time. I'm like, I'm okay if we nuke Mars out of the sky because it's a bit much, right? But, you know, as I've gotten into a better relationship with Mars, jokes aside, like I've learned how to use my Mars in a very healthy way and how to have a better relationship. So it doesn't feel like I like, you know, my mentor, Sam Reynolds, calls my Mars the Hulk. It's like, it's chill until it's not. There's that scene in Captain America where Captain's like, how are you going to become the Hulk? And he's like, that's my secret, Cap. I'm always angry. That's Mars and Taurus, but not very healthy if it just randomly does that, right? Well, getting into that theurgical relationship taught me more about Mars and how to utilize Mars in healthier, better ways in my own life and the way that I emanate that presence in my own chart so that it's more constructive rather than destructive. So there's a lot of benefits to it, but commit to that 10, 15 minutes, do it for a couple months, see how it feels. It doesn't have to be this grandiose mystical experience. You don't have to like be in touch with the gods in like this crazy way every day. It's more about just the habit and being present. And then if you have a peak experience, phenomenal. Write it down, record it, never forget it. But if you don't, just see how your life moves. I think that's a really good indicator of how things are going.
I love that. Well, I'm curious too. Maybe we can talk about this more on the tail end with the animism, but also this talisman component as we start to think about the fixed stars. And I was sitting with that this morning around the combination of the parent with whatever the luminary is in the sky, if that's creating the imprint of some sort of talismanic imprint.
Absolutely. So the way that I would look at this, and I give this explanation when you get a Perrin's reading, which by the way, I have no idea how to pronounce it properly, and I will mispronounce many things I am actually very Midwestern. So just warning everyone, I'm probably going to mispronounce Greek, probably transliterated Arabic, and probably just English in general. But you know, with the parents, it really is like, first of all, I know that Eliza, we had a really big moment in our consultation where you got affirmation of something that had been bothering you about getting other readings before. And it was like, oh, it was in your parents. There you go. The Greeks even saw fixed stars as a higher sphere of divinity than the planets. What basically happened is the Egyptians, they were utilizing parens and heliacal rise, culminating setting stars. But precession, you know, they had to constantly update this calendar called the decans, which was actually a worship calendar. They wanted to know what star was heliacally rising so that they knew who to pray to at night to make sure their sun god got reborn the next day. Because if sun god didn't get reborn, we were all going to perish. So very, very important to them. They didn't have a problem with that, the sky moving. To them, their gods were living. And so it just made sense to update things as they grew, right? But the Greeks came along and the Greeks were like, no, the highest form of divinity is fixed, symmetrical, and predictable. And so they come up with this concept called unity, which is not really a sphere so much as it emanates everywhere all the time. It's where we come from. It's where we return to. Ultimately, we're all united, right? But then they said the fixed stars were right underneath unity. And so the fixed stars were kind of like this idea of the gods separating outside of unity and into individual components. And that they then, and this is very interesting, they then lent their images to the zodiac. And what we call talismanic magic, when we're talking about it more anthropologically, is scholastic image magic. So what they were really speaking to is that the stars, because you know, the Greek zodiac was based off of seasonal sunlight, it was not based off of the stars. You know, what they were saying is that these stars were creating talismanic houses for the planets. But the thing is, the Greeks kind of like got rid of the stars in their practice as a result. They were projecting them back onto the ecliptic, which is still a very questionable practice, even in astronomy, because the Earth is not actually perfectly round. So your different longitudinal and latitudinal lines vary across the Earth's surface. So it's really hard to know where we should project it accurately. And that's how they started to utilize them. Now, I still use actually projected degree conjunction kind of elections for my own magic. So it's not that it doesn't work. I will say in experimenting with heliacal rise and culmination, we're talking light years difference in power. So how this would actually manifest in a birth chart with Purans is you could say that planet ends up taking the signature of the star and often gets completely modified by it because the stars are so loud. So for example, you know, I'm an Aquarius sun. Most people have no idea I'm an Aquarius sun. Most of them guess Capricorn. I do have a Capricorn stellium, Taurus, or Cancer. Well, I have like major algal parents. It's like a thing that people ask me about the most because everyone's like really into algal at the moment. And it does come through, but not in the way that most people would expect when they see these ancient prognostications. They are thinking algal is like evil or really extreme. And there are moments where I can be a very extreme person, especially if I'm righteously angry. But I like how Brady actually describes like algal is a primordial creatrix and she's syncretic with Mother Earth. And I've felt that very much because I feel like especially my role on this planet is to get people back in touch with the Earth. And it wasn't until I got into animism that I realized what my faith was. And I had lost my faith for years. Well, my Jupiter is conjoined algal by projected degree too. So it was like, wow, okay, this is really screaming through so much louder. I had such a struggle. I, to this day, I have a struggle with Jupiter itself. But I think that's because I have such a strong relationship with algal that that's much louder to me than my actual Jupiter. And this is often the case with stars. For example, like having really, really earthy charts, but then you find out someone has like Alcyone as one of their heliacal stars. So while they can be very practical people, they're also extremely mystical and they can kind of tap into messages or information that no one else can access. And then they're like, wait, where's this in my chart? Which I hear all the time whenever we start going through star patterns is like, this is nowhere in my normal Hellenistic or, you know, Placidus chart. And I'm like, of course not. But the stars kind of got ignored for years and years. And for all the stuff that's been going on with, you know, Dr. Brady, I am very grateful at least that she revived this practice. We're very lucky to have it. and be able to find answers for things that we otherwise have been like, I don't see how this is in my chart. I don't see how this is in my life. And often counter to your chart, counter to what you think your vocation should be or how you deal with relationships or anything. You know, like I have a Taurus seventh house. You'd think that relationships would be pretty easy for me, but actually it's taken years to develop that ability because I have Capella there. I have, Capella is actually setting with my descendant, and it's like this push-pull between like this very Artemis, I want to nurture certain people, but also, because it was syncretic with Artemis, also like, don't go into my forest, don't tell me what to do, or I might like, you know, kill you with an arrow. It's very independent, and it's back and forth between wanting domestic nurturing, but also not wanting to like be bossed around or be held accountable by anybody. That screams out in my life so much more than my descendant in Taurus. And that's because the stars do have, and that's why I call my reading Siren Star Songs. They often come screaming through your life and you have no idea what's going on. You're like, this makes no sense in my chart. It makes no sense at all. Why? And then you find out your stars and you're like, oh. And then when they're with planets, those planets get modified. So if let's say you have a really like fiery Mercury, but then you have it with like Sue Ellison, which is the dolphin in a parent, well, it's not going to come across as super fiery. Instead, it's going to be very like playful and wants to gather with groups and actually loves consensus and very different, you know? So it's really cool to see it, but it can be very confusing, and learning the technique is dizzying because it's so different. It's three-dimensional. So like very different to how we usually work with a flat 2D kind of wheel.
I wonder if you could define for our audience what a parent is and distinguish that from the degrees that many people may have heard for the fixed stars, which are, as you say, projected onto the ecliptic. But maybe you could make that distinction.
Sure. So for people who are not super well versed in astrology, the ecliptic is the pathway of the sun. And this is what we've attached our zodiac to, because what the Babylonians, actually the Neo-Babylonians, figured out was these wandering stars, which were the planets, were traveling along the pathway of the sun. And so then the Greeks come along and they create the zodiac we use today based off of seasonal sunlight, not based off the stars. The stars were roughly aligned. The constellations were roughly aligned with the signs. They were never going to be perfect. They're all different sizes, all kinds of crazy stuff. So what happens is we have stars all over the sky, though, not this one little flat track in the sky, which is actually quite small. And what happens with a conjunction is we take it and we project it utilizing a longitudinal degree back onto the ecliptic. So for example, Vega, which is actually kind of floating out in the middle of the sky, gets projected back at like 15 degrees Capricorn. But this was where my crisis of faith came from, figuring out I'm an animist and I want to have this honest relationship with the sky. I went outside to find Vega. It is not in Capricorn. It is nowhere near Capricorn. It's like halfway across the sky. And so that's what happens with conjunctions. Now, again, because of how the metaphysics works with making an election, the moon acts as a translator of light. And that's how we are able to use like a conjunction in a magical election with the stars to kind of emanate their power into whatever talismanic something we're making. It works. And it's not a bad practice. It's actually very much simpler if you don't have the software to look at heliacal rises in that. But it's not the same. So what a parent is it's basically a star that is in a phase. So stars can rise, culminate, set, and even be down on the nadir, or what the Egyptians would call the hearthstone area. And it is in an angular relationship with a planet that can also be in a phase. You know, so planets can rise, culminate, set, go down on the nadir, right? The reason it's so confusing is because it is in three-dimensional space. It is not something where the star is being projected back onto that ecliptic. It's out in the sky where it is. So in order to have that relationship with the planet, first of all, our orbs tighten a lot with parents so much because there's so many stars. Your whole, like, do you want every star in the sky to be yours? That's impossible, right? Or at least it'd be very hard to like figure it out in a reading style. So how does it get activated? What the Greeks believed, and this is where we do kind of syncretize it together, is the planets are bringing things down to the terrestrial realm. That's why they're closer to us and they're of a lesser degree of divinity. they also kind of move very rapidly and retrograde and stuff in a way that reminded the Greeks, especially of human activity, not divine activity. So we need to have a parens with either an angular point or with a planet in order for that star to be specifically activated in our chart and coming back into the terrestrial realm. Then you have the heliacal rising culminating setting stars. And those guys, they basically rule periods of time and give you gifts. So your heliacal rising star ruled 10 days. That's what the decans were originally. They've changed significantly. And in fact, Austin Coppock, whenever he finally reprints 36 Faces, he does a phenomenal job of explaining how this all got started and where we've taken this tradition today. But it was very different when it first started. And it was based off of that heliacal rising star, eventually turned into heliacal culminating star. And what this means, we say heliacal, what it means, and I'm, again, probably not pronouncing anything correctly, take it with a grain of salt, is that this was a star that was specifically rising in the east before the sun, setting in the west before the sun, or culminating at a specific point in a way that was usually preceding the sun itself. So in this way, the star is kind of like, well, a herald for our star, which is the sun. And it rules that time period. And for the Egyptians, that god would determine whether the sun would be reborn or not for 10 days. So you prayed and petitioned to that star and that god associated with that star to make sure that the sun was rising. For us, it's more like how we step more fully into the truth of who we are and our potential. So I hope that wasn't too confusing. It's really hard to explain without a visual because it's just so complicated.
Well, maybe you can go into that a little bit. And for somebody that's new to astrology, where do they start with this? Where do they go to just access a little bit of information and get some sort of visual point of reference for themselves?
So you can get Brady's books. That's a good way to start. I will say this. I didn't fully understand it until I took the lectures that Brady has pre-recorded. Right now, it's a little problematic. There's been some controversy because classes are not being held in a way where students feel safe at the moment. So it's kind of, it's hard to make a recommendation when I see a lot of people saying the same thing, especially if you're a person of color or marginalized in any way. There's groups of people not taking criticism very well as teachers, and they're not really adjusting the way they teach. So that being said, if you absolutely, like, you're low on resources and you really need to get started or you feel this draw, you can start with the books. They're definitely pretty affordable. It's still not going to be 100% the thing you need. Now, you guys are going to be one of the first people to hear this, but I have been writing specifically a class for this. And specifically geared towards magical practitioners, because I want us to move towards using the heliacal rise and culmination of the stars for our elections, because I found them to be so more profoundly powerful and direct compared to a conjunction. In the meantime, though, you know, we've got some great resources between myself and Oscar over at, and I'm not going to pronounce this correctly. I'm so sorry, Oscar. Cielo Astro. He's phenomenal with the fixed stars. I highly recommend looking at the work he's done. He wrote wonderful essays about a lot of fixed stars that are totally worth purchasing. And, you know, going on Twitter and engaging with the fixed star community can be really rewarding because we're constantly writing up threads and answering questions because it's such a broad topic. I also wrote a blog where I did try to at least attempt to show. I feel like you have to see it in real time and how things move though. And that's really where the value comes. It's probably something you need a class for. If you're at the very beginning, you know nothing about astrology, go learn some basic astrology first. Go learn a little bit about reading a birth chart, the planets, the houses, because it does come together with the parens. There's tons of people who teach those classes. So, you know, there's unlimited resources. And phenomenally, Stormy Grace has her free YouTube university she's putting together. So there's going to be a lot of free resources for you to get started in astrology, period. And I'm hoping to eventually put out some very affordable, very easy to access resources on stars, because I don't want there to be gatekeeping based off of resources. That's kind of a problem. I feel like it's everyone's birthright to have this relationship with the sky. So I am working on it, but it won't be ready until later this year.
What do you think about using AstroDienst for this information?
You can look up your parents with AstroDienst. I will say this, it will vary compared to Brady's software. And part of it is because AstroDienst has basically used general coordinates. And your coordinates, we're talking about geographic coordinates, are very specific to your parents. So sometimes people will come to me during a reading and say, oh, this doesn't match what I got from astro.com. And I'm like, probably won't, because Brady's software that I utilize actually has very sensitive geographic coordinates. And usually just that few degrees in difference when we're talking about literally the crosshairs of longitude and latitude can significantly change your parents in particular. It's a good place to start. I don't think that it's inaccurate, but there may be things that differ. And that's something to be aware of. Now, I will say, if you want a general report, I don't usually advise reports. I think you should talk to an astrologer and you'll get a lot more out of it. But let's say you've got $25. The report from Brady is actually phenomenal. It's a really good report. It is a great place to start. And then if you want additional details, or, you know, I like to talk a lot about like, how do we put ourselves in balance with especially stars that might be a little extreme, talk to an astrologer. You know, and right now I think that it's myself and Oscar who do most of this work in the community. So, you know, book with one of us. And if you can't, talk in the astro community. We are definitely, I love our community because despite all its flaws, because there's definitely flaws, no, nothing is perfect here. It is very generous. We do try to help each other. And we're all just wanting to talk about the things that we nerd out about. So like, go and talk with the community. We're pretty cool.
Okay, first of all, I cannot wait to register for your course. So let me know when it happens. I mean, I guess I'll see the advertisement on Twitter once it's ready. But secondly, I am so enthralled. And this actually is the heart of why I even wanted to do this podcast, because I've been thinking a lot about parents since our reading. And I do think a lot about the ecliptic and the longitudinal degrees that we use. And I think about them being limiting. So I have always been wondering, as a magical practitioner, how do we marry or merge or work with that gap? And you're speaking to that right now by saying that you've found that your practices are, you said the phrase light years, different or light years ahead when you're working with the heliacal rising or setting, et cetera, stars compared to the longitudinal degrees. I do want to hear more about that. If you can share, I know that this is probably very complicated and also it's the focus of your course, but I'm just curious too, can you also work with parents magically? And if you do work with parents magically, in terms of how that angular relationship between a star and a planet is perhaps influencing that planet, would that be factored into your planetary magic, or would you be working with the stars or both? Like, how do you figure parents into all of that?
So I think it's actually pretty similar to like when you have an aspect, right? Because that's all parents are. It's a type of aspect. When we talk about aspects in astrology, I think it's more useful to say, these things are in relationship with one another, and the aspect describes the type of relationship. Now, parents don't change, right? It's not like you have like a square parent or an opposition parent or a conjunction parent. So that's where it kind of gets a little confusing. But what it really is like basically the planet becomes the amplifier of that star's energy, right? Now, you could work with it. However, you have to be careful, right? Because there's still afflictions that can happen. You have to also look at where the planet is in relation to other planets, what house it is in a flat chart. It's a much more complicated, because here's the thing. I got into fixed star magic specifically because I was like, those elections, the conjunctions, are way easier than almost any other type of election you can do. So, and I'm lazy. I'm like, I don't have a lot of time in my life. I also just feel really drawn to the stars. I'm just going to make that my specialty. But then it was like, I started getting into the parents as a possibility. I'm still experimenting with it because this is not something you're going to find, at least in a text that's been translated. Maybe it's in a text somewhere that we have not yet translated. So I'm trying to marry the rules of what Christopher Warnock teaches in his class, which is where I learned my astrological magic. You know, how do we marry that, which tells you a lot about like how to keep your planets out of affliction, how to make sure that they're powerful and angular and all that, with this idea that you also have a pairin with a star, and make it about invoking that star and having that planet be the vehicle that carries that light through, right? I'm still playing with that because it does get much more complicated. Because first you have to have the pairin and you have to determine like the strength of it. When we're looking at a normal election, for example, we want to make sure that you have applying aspects, things that give you a little bit of space and time to complete your actual operation, because God knows if you've ever done astrological magic, sometimes you've only got like a 5-minute window to quickly like scratch in the symbol into something, right? Well, we still have that kind of issue with a pairin. It is a bigger window of time in general, but pairins, the orbs for pairins are tiny. We're talking minutes, not degrees. So how do we make sure that that pairin gives us the maximum amount of space to complete our operation while still keeping the power that we are trying to utilize, right? And then also, how do we make sure that the planet that's the vehicle for that is in good condition? And how do we make sure that they play well together? And that's another thing. For example, if you have, let's say, Venus with Phosses, and Phosses is the deadly star of the archer, and it's an extremely aggressive, militant kind of star, they may not play well together. You know what I'm saying? Like, maybe you use it to be a team captain in a sport. That'd be a great way to utilize it, right? Because Venus wants to bring people together, and Phosses is very like mission directed and very almost physical in a sense. But that's a very, very particular way of using it. Like, it's a very narrow road to use it. And so you want to make sure that the star and the planet are in a good relationship too. We have layers and layers that end up happening here. What I'm trying to teach first off, because this can get very complicated quickly, so we want to be able to first assess your chart. Certain magic is going to jive with you. Certain magic is not going to jive with you. So we want to be careful with you as the individual with the operations that you complete. Secondly, just learning how to use heliacal rise and culmination and the difference between them as far as like qualitative factors. And then I am doing specifically like elections with the moon, because the moon traditionally is that translator of light anyway. So I look for pairings of the moon, because the moon, generally speaking, it is a reflective kind of entity. So it actually can mold and jive with just about any star. That is kind of what it does, right? And that's what we do when we're doing normal elections, is that the moon has to be the translator of light in that election. So it's an easier jump, but I'm still making determinations about other planets. I am very experimental, but I don't share those experiments till I know it's safe, right? Because let's say you did Mars with, and you're thinking, oh, Mars with Phosses, because Mars is very martial, Phosses is very martial, but it ends up becoming like really violent or something, because Phosses is a battle star, or you become super, super fixated on things that, you know, upset you or piss you off, because that's kind of what Phosses does. It gives you intense focus. And now you're being very martial about it. You know, that's not a very positive outcome for your life, unless that's necessary for what you're doing. And for most of us, it's not. So I have to be very careful with how much I experiment and share with everybody, because there's been some outcomes that I go, ooh, not that. Definitely not that. Not sure if it'll be like that for every star, but definitely not these two together. I hope that that answers it. It's a little broad.
No, that does. That absolutely helps illuminate some of what I've been wondering anyway, and I'm really curious to keep exploring it and to see how you explore it too and share your information. This segues neatly to another question I had, which was, I am curious to hear stories or an example if you're comfortable sharing, and you don't have to if you're not comfortable, but either a success story or maybe a, you know, star magic gone wrong story, whatever occurs to you.
So I'm a little different in my practice, and because of that, I don't have too many horrible stories for myself. I have heard lots of horror stories from other people. First of all, I'm really cautious because I find that astrological magic is probably the most powerful magic I have ever worked with. The only exception to this is necromancy with my ancestors is incredibly powerful, right? But astrological magic, you know, it is kind of like we're trying to bottle lightning. And because of that, like, I am hyper cautious. Now, in my elections, I might be a little liberal. For example, I have one coming up for Vega that my co-magician and best friend would like, if she saw the, I haven't shown her the election because she doesn't have a desire to work with it. But if she'd seen the election, she would have said no anyways, because Uranus is separating off, but it's pretty close. And like, that would not be her bag. And I'm like, yeah, you know, the outers are kind of in the way all the time. I don't take as much, you know, into account with them. But as far as like why I get better outcomes, I think it's because I spend so much time relationship building first. Like, I don't go in to work with a star or to work with a planet without having a relationship first. And like, a good example is I did an algal election. Now, I've heard even from Caitlin, who is a phenomenal astromagician, you know, she had electrical disturbances. She wrote an article that just disappeared. When she put that photo of the algal mirror up in the Facebook group, people kind of lost their minds for about a month, like obsessed, which is exactly what happens with the algal in that mirror, is it does cause obsession. And so I've heard about all this. I went into my relationship with algal extremely cautiously, especially while I don't subscribe entirely to these ancient prognostications. I have seen a lot of people go through an initiation with algal where they watch someone receive a head injury or something similar, or they will get like splitting headaches for a month while they adjust to the talisman. And I'm like, I don't really have time for that. also, I don't really have a desire. One of the people in my house has a pre-existing head injury and scar tissue in the back of his head. And like, that was a big like alarm for me. Cause I was like, I don't want that to happen to someone I love. Right. So I walked into that relationship very cautiously. And honestly, it was after algal had kind of chased me, like was following me around everywhere I went, would show up all the time. And I was finally like, fine. So I started a devotional relationship very cautiously, very respectfully. And I did that for several months before I even thought about looking for elections, because I wanted to make sure that her and I were good. Like, especially when you're talking about an extreme star, you want to make sure that you're in a good relationship with that entity so that you can have a better outcome for your working. And actually, I decided that I wasn't going to do any intense, like I didn't make a talisman. I don't need more algal in my life. I'm good. I've got it everywhere in my chart. I've got it everywhere. My parents don't need more. But I did want to make some devotional material for her that was elected specifically in honor of her. And I did make an oil, like a multi-purpose oil that can both do the uncrossing as well as baneful work if it was necessary, which I've only had to use twice. So it's not something that I was like ready to go with, like, oh, let's go curse a bunch of people, or, oh, I have so many people sending stuff my way. I just need to like douse myself in it. I have a huge bottle sitting in a cupboard that has been literally drops have been used specifically for workings. So that's a big, I think a huge difference, but I will say this, like I can feel her presence when I'm doing these workings. I didn't have an electrical disturbance, which was nice. And I even questioned if I'd done it right because I'd heard all these stories. I was like, maybe I just didn't do a good job. Like maybe this is a dud, which happens. It happens in astrological magic. We don't always get it right. But then I pulled a card. I always ask the entity how they feel about the end of this working when I'm finished. And I got the Empress. And I was like, oh, someone is super, super happy. So as far as making her feel like queen, I did a good job. And that was my whole goal. And then it was wild because we went to go, I like to give the ritual offerings back to the land. So I throw it over my fence in the back, or I'll set it out for, I have a murder of crows that's adopted me over several years of me feeding them. They're bossy. Okay. They come to my window and they tell me when they're hungry. And I'm like, you know what? Starting to question if this was a good idea. It's 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm not going to feed you. But you know, I went out to go give these offerings and they don't usually come out. It was probably 2 o'clock in the morning when I finished. They're usually gone. They were lined. I mean, my entire fence line was lined with birds, absolutely lined. And that was pretty wild. I mean, we'll get a handful of birds that come out, especially if I put the food out. They didn't move. That was a little bit, I'll be honest, I was a little shook. I was like, I don't know if this is like Children of the Corn type situation or if this is a good thing. I'm going to take it as a good thing. And then shortly after that, I mean, I'd always had a great relationship with those birds, but then it got more intense. They actually started nesting above my window, which was wild, because they're definitely, these are wild birds. I live pretty rural, so these are not domesticated. And that was pretty wild. I grow hellebores. I started that way before I ever got involved with algal. And they started to rebloom again at the wrong time of year. And I was like, what's this? But hellebores are considered her flower. And so I was like, okay, that's a very positive omen that this went well. So I like to see confirmation that my working has worked. Bad situations? I don't know that I have a bad situation as so much like mistakes you make during working. For example, we started doing the candles before the working that I was creating. I actually have one sitting here in front of me. We thought that we'd given them enough time to cool, but our whole kitchen had heated up from this process. And like, we're sitting there and I'm trying to like sprinkle in like silver leaf and things on top of the candle. And it's just sinking. And I'm just sitting there. And so like, then we had to take these huge, and I mean huge candles, you can see here, like it's very heavy, and try to move them into a container of water. And like wax was going everywhere and I almost burned myself and we almost dropped this whole tray of candles onto the ground. And like, these are the things that no magician wants you to know. So congratulations, you get my blooper reel. But we do all kinds of weird stuff when we're in an election. It's not that eloquent. All those like Instagram pictures of beautiful altars. I mean, I have the beautiful pictures. I took the pictures for my class. So I was like, I want them to feel inspired. But the whole time I'm like, pretty sure I burned my hand. Pretty sure I burned my foot. Pretty sure there's going to be wax on the stove for the next 6 months that we can't get up. Like, and that's normal, you know, like no one wants to talk about that part, but you're pretty, you've only got 15 minutes to get this done and you're rushing around. And me and my partner were doing it together. And you have to keep this fumigation going the whole time. If you don't have stick incense, you have to continually refeed and like light new charcoal discs. So that was his whole job, was just sit there and light charcoal discs and add more onto there. And at one point he was trying so hard to help me with the candles that we look over and we're like, oh my God, the fumigation is going out. So now we're trying to like move these candles and get the fumigation going again. No one talks about that. It's a mess. The whole time you're just basically, I told you guys before at the beginning of this, you're Merlin with his beard and his tea. You think you're doing something really holy and great. And the whole time you're like, I literally have 8 minutes left. Oh my God. And you're dropping stuff and you're making a mess. And you're like, oh my gosh, Algal, please don't think this is disrespectful. I totally just dropped stuff all over the altar I set up for you. I totally put wax all over the food that I put on your altar. Like, it's a real thing, you know? So I think that that's the reality of it. Other people's stories. Oh man, where do I start? If you're not in a good relationship with an entity, bad things happen. If you are doing things counter to the nature of that entity, bad things happen. I had a person in my life who also had a similar algal position in their chart. And they were going through some tough stuff. And they did embody like algal losing her head, like 100%. And they had an algal talisman they were wearing. And they were doing a lot of algal magic at the time. And so all of the warnings that you hear about algal, they manifested because it wasn't a very healthy relationship. And in that way, also algal can either be the object of obsession, which I have experienced in my life, or you can be the obsessor, which I've also experienced in my life. And she was living out both in a very extreme way. And it was really unfortunate. And then she started obsessing. It was like algal versus algal started obsessing with me, you know, and that became a public situation, which many people know about at this point. And that can happen. Now there was other factors there. Someone else who had tried to do an algal working was cursing that person. And their algal working went so poorly that they actually had a reaction to the talisman. It like blew their hand up. But that person was doing things that I know for a fact, having this relationship with algal at this point in my life, like she would not be down with. And it was like, of course, she doesn't want to work with you. You went to her like a vending machine. And this is what you got out. I told you she'd come back for like interest, right? Like that happens. I've had situations with Regulus that are interesting. Regulus and algal in my life. Now, some people have had different things going on, but for me, they don't get along. Regulus does not want to be on the same altar as Algol. I've literally found like offerings on the ground with no explanation as to why they're there. Or like I had this beautiful piece of art for Regulus and it just randomly moved into another part of the room. Cause he was like, no, I don't want to be next to her. When I use too much Regulus, I can't sleep because I'm not a very solar person. When I did that Regulus working, I had insomnia for like 8 days, could not sleep. And actually the day I did it, cause in Ireland here, a lot of the elections that I did last year were like 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, super, super early. You would think I'd be ready to pass out. After my algo working, I went to sleep like a baby. I was like, good night. My Regulus working, I didn't sleep at all. I didn't go to sleep. In fact, I felt completely reinvigorated, which is such a sign of like a solar kind of entities, like sudden rush of vital energy. And like, I was ready to like run a marathon. And then I didn't sleep for several days. And I was like, wait, I would like to not run a marathon. I would like to go to sleep, please. And like, I had to completely like black out the altar and like not use the materia, which I wasn't even using the ones that I had elected. You're supposed to like let that marinate for about a full moon cycle. I was using some from Sphere and Sundry, but I think just doing that election with the star really pumped it up. And I mean, my mind felt like fully awake. My body was like, help me, help me, please. I'm so tired. But like, I sat and like literally hours after that election, like wrote up 20,000 words worth of a class I was writing at the time and like only had to edit out about 5,000 of them. And I was like, yes, this is awesome. But by day three, I was like, I don't want to think anymore. I don't want to do anything anymore. I just want to like lay down. So there's a lot of things that can come up. It's good to especially reground, which is something I'm not always great about remembering. But like I have a star entity I work with, Alcade, that is great for grounding. So if I'm finished with it working, I'll take some Alcade tincture. I'll go and literally put my feet in the earth for about 10, 15 minutes. Then usually like, you know, douse myself in magnesium oil, take some melatonin and try to sleep because magic takes energy. It takes a lot of time. This has been a diatribe. I hope that this gives you some stories though.
It's perfect. Yeah, no, well, first of all, thank you for sharing how magic is messy and not always Instagram perfect or neat, and nor should it be. I just can't imagine, you know, our forebears, our folk magic forebears, working neatly or pristinely. I don't think that the pristine is even an aspiration for, at least not for me. But no, thank you so much for sharing those stories. And also I think that, well, I hope that people also take your caution to heart because this is real and you can blow some things up, or, you know, metaphorically or literally in some cases. So it's, yeah, it's definitely something not to be too reckless about.
Y'all, this is wild. I just, my crows are actually, this never happens. My front yard is just like pavement going out into a street and they're just chilling out there right now. So they knew.
They're coming to say hi to our like, podcast.
Right? They're like, do you have food? You're not answering at your window. So we came to your other window.
Well, there's so much more that I think, Kes, you had to ask Amaya, and I was wondering if you wanted to ask any last questions. At least that's what you said in your email.
Yeah, no, I think I just had maybe a really practical question because I'm just intrigued to give our listeners and hear from you. How can we best use our fixed stars over the course of the life? Maybe that's too broad, but you know, once you have a sense of it, it's kind of been divided up for me with the little reading I've been doing from Brady, but it seems like there's a component of character or vocation or what's your calling, where can you find the most meaning and satisfaction? And then these overarching narratives. So I'm wondering if you can just, you know, give a little outline of how we could maybe most efficiently or effectively utilize what we learn about our own fixed stars as an application to, you know, living our best selves?
Absolutely. I think that's a great question. It's one that I definitely address in my readings, because I have a third house stellium and it's all cap. And like, I'm like, okay, what's this knowledge good for? Like, we have to like do something with it, right? So one of the things to know is your heliacal rising star is kind of like, I call it the book title of your life. It's similar to your ascendant or your sun sign, but our parents are how we fulfill that theme. And your heliacal setting star is kind of like a gift given to you that if you lean into it, you end up having a more, you could say, content or satisfying life and how you feel that you contributed to the world. You know, we all want to make a contribution. We all, whether that's, you know, just within our own community or being kind to people, or it's literally doing something that's world changing. I think that we need all of it. None of it is more important than anything else. The first thing I look at, you know, if you can get a reading, that's like the best thing you could do, because these books and even like the printed reports are still going to be limited as far as the information that you get. If you can't get a reading though, I highly encourage you to go and look up examples. Or if you can get another set of books, if you've got, and this is kind of pricey, if you've got about $100 sitting around, Diane Rosenberg's books, Secrets of the Ancient Skies, they're like my Bibles. If I could only have one set of star books, it would be those. Because she gives so many examples. Now she's basing this off of conjunctions and she has a whole like reasoning behind it that actually makes a lot of sense. So I don't think it's one or the other. What I like about it is seeing the examples, seeing people like who've had this in their lives. I think that's more useful than just looking at an ancient prognostication or a general description, because you start to see parallels and also you can see pitfalls. None of us are immune to utilizing something in our lives in an inappropriate manner or in a way that's maybe not as constructive as we wish it could be. And so seeing an example and making some notes and being like, how do I mitigate this? This is where you can get into like remediation. For example, like not only do I have Mars ruling almost my entire chart, because I'm a Scorpio rising and Mars in Taurus, it's angular, it just likes to misbehave. I also just like have so many battle stars in my parents, so many battle stars. And so like what I do for mitigation, I do daily Venus remediation. Like that is not an option for me, because I can get so caught up in what my mission is that I don't eat or get up to go to the bathroom or things like that. But I can also become like very righteously angry about things and like really go on a tangent. I have to catch myself, because like that's not really useful for anyone, and especially not myself. And it really helped me to go and look up, you know, like what were some examples, and finding out like algal is not just mitigated to evil events, although you see that too. Algal also has to do with vaccinations. Like our major vaccines happen often with algal activations, which is exciting, because we actually have like a major eclipse that's going to conjoin algal in November, like almost to the exact degree. And that says to me like either something really terrible might happen, because that does happen, or we're going to finally find the final vaccine for COVID. And I'm like, please, please, please let it be that, because we could all use the ability to get the hell out of the house, right? So being able to see multiple examples was important, because I have algal everywhere, and algal only has negative stuff if you look to the ancients, right? And I do love Brady's like description of algal, but like it is also limited. And so going and finding examples and being like, actually quite a few performers and writers and witchy people have all had algal. It's not all bad all the time. And also seeing like, where did they go wrong? And also once you see their examples, you can look up their full chart, look up their parents. And that's where you see the stars starting to interact, right? For example, I have like Fosses and Acumen, these two really big battle stars as my heliacal stars. But then I have these really caring stars in my parents and these very mystical stars in my parents. So it kind of augments it, where it's like, yeah, I can be very much a warrior, very much like I have to do the thing. We have to complete the mission. We have to help people who are in a bad place. And also I can be very motherly. And if I lean a little bit more in that direction, the battle then becomes more about nurturing and how we nurture better, rather than about just going and like trying to find someone that I need to like take out or something. which is how it often feels. It can become this overwhelming thing of like, we just got to get rid of you. You're trash, right? Like, and that's not healthy. That's not good. So when I got to know my stars better in relation with one another and started looking at examples of each one and also seeing other charts that at least mirrored mine in some ways and kind of taking notes about, oh, well, this would be a better way of using this. This person did a great job with this. This person really did not. And kind of learning by example. And then of course, get in relationship, especially with challenging stars. You're not gonna be able to have a relationship with all of them. You won't be able to keep up with it. And consistency is key here. But find, first of all, the stars that you'll benefit the most from. You know, like if you have something like Alcyone or a royal star, like they're double-edged swords, but they can be great beneficiaries to you. They can be great teachers, right? But so can your harsh stars. That's why I had to start the algo practice. It wasn't because I wanted to be an edgelord as much as a Scorpio rising as I am. I really was truly very cautious about it. But I found that actually when I got in a relationship with algo, a lot of the negative things associated with algo disappeared from my life. Just acknowledging her presence, knowing that she is kind of like a celestial parent or elder to me, learning from it, having those conversations, taking out the tarot deck and being present. That's been probably the biggest thing for me, is having that relationship has taught me more about what I can do with this that's positive.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you for asking.
Yeah, of course.
That seems like a really beautiful place to end, I would say.
And where can people find you? What is your website and your Twitter handle and your Instagram?
Oh my gosh. So I just opened my Instagram. I'm not going to lie. I'm a little bit overwhelmed, but my Instagram and my website are the same, heartwarriorpath.com. And then Instagram is heartwarriorpath. And then my Twitter handle is because Heart Warrior Path is too long. It's Feral, the Nifika. So, I know, like, could I get any more Scorpio rising than that? But Feral is F-E-R-A-L, the Nifika, V-E-N-E-F-I-C-A. No spaces, no characters. I'm very active on there. I'm still trying to, like, wrap my head around. I feel very old. I was on Instagram, like, 4 years ago, and then I left. And I was encouraged by Diana Demascena to rejoin, and I did, but I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm so old.
I feel that way on Twitter. So I feel old. That way on every social media platform, to be honest.
It's a whole nother podcast, isn't it, ladies?
Yes.
Okay, where can people find you, Kestrel?
Well, before I say where people can find me, I want to invite all of us, potentially when we can travel again. There's actually a star circle in the Bighorn Mountains of Wyoming.
I love that. I grew up in Wyoming. Yes.
Yes. The Crow people actually are the ones who created it. And I'm starting to learn more about it. There's a book called by Ivy Marriott is her name. So it's Sky Circle. But I just thought it'd be really a fun way for us all to eventually, fingers crossed, get together and just sort of stories. Yeah. That they were weaving. If anything, just preparing for this podcast just really ignited it, wanting to know more of the ancestral stories beyond what we just see. And people can find me at Kessaru on Instagram and also at kestrelneathawk.com.
And you can find Eliza and I at cosmictonic.com. Our Instagram is at cosmictonic and our Twitter handle is cosmic_tonic. And we'd like to thank everyone for being here, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Bye. Thank you, Amaya.